Time with you folks. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for the opportunity to bring more goodness to your life. And daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives. Why? So we get to enjoy a global loving community. And I'm so thrilled to bring a guest to you. We always like to find shortcuts to making our lives work better. And I know that you're going to thoroughly enjoy our guest today. He is a fabulous, fabulous gentleman. His name is Jean-Claude Coven. If you haven't heard of him yet, in the years ahead, he will become as popular as many of the authors like the Celestine Prophecy, Conversations with God, so many of the names that have become prominent in New Thought, in personal growth, in higher consciousness. I am so honored to have him. He is one of those rare, independent, and adventurous free spirits who successfully combines practical enterprise and cosmic mystery. He is a highly successful entrepreneur who has launched more than a dozen business ventures over the course of four decades. So we're talking some great practical experience here, and during which time he's also studied with spiritual masters and led awareness-expanding workshops on six continents. I don't know why he missed one of the continents, but maybe he'll tell us. Anyway, Jean-Claude's ability is just so wonderful to share, and he has an abiding love of the mystery of creation, and it sent him around the world on a relentless quest to learn from a host of extraordinary masters, both on and beyond this plane of existence, which we're going to be curious to find out about the beyond this plane of existence part. What he saw and realized along the way just informs his unique perspective and imbues his writing with an uncommon love, a power, and a wisdom. And yes, as you learn more, you'll find that Jean-Claude speaks for the millions of light workers, of the conscious people, of so many of the members of my audience who have come to this planet to help evolve the consciousness of not only themselves, but of those around them. And with startling clarity and power, Jean-Claude's words and wisdom awaken the dormant memories hidden deep within each of us. We hope they're the good memories, of course. And suddenly we remember our true self and our true purpose with such certainty that we never fall asleep again. We stay awake. So I want you all to stay awake for this wonderful interview. And for those of you curious, where would this man travel to six continents end up? He lives currently in Rancho Mirage, California, with his wife, Ariane, and Zeus, a 15-inch high dog of undetermined pedigree. that sits in constant meditation on his desk, offering support and unconditional love as only a stuffed animal can. And we, of course, don't know how stuffed Zeus is, but I'm sure he's well fed. Without another moment of hesitation, I want to welcome Jean-Claude to the show today. Jean-Claude, are you there?
I am indeed. Just to clarify, Zeus is a stuffed animal. You know, the kind that you buy in the store, not a real one that went through a taxidermist.
Oh,
he's just a wonderful.
Well, Roy Rogers actually stuffed Trigger, but
no, I know. I know that to me is a little bit morose. he was a toy dog that's dressed in a beautiful vest. In fact, if you'd like to see a picture of Zeus, Zeus is on the website, which is goingdeeper.org. And on the menu, you'll see something where you can ask Zeus incredible questions. In fact, I'll tell you a story about this just to open up the interview, which is really fun.
Yes.
At one point early on, we did a survey where we invited over 50,000 people in the metaphysical community to submit a question to higher power that Zeus was going to answer, because Zeus comes from a character in the book that is able to access a much higher dimension of being, and so can speak from at least that particular perspective. So as you can imagine, we had quite a bevy of questions coming in. The thing that was very interesting, even though the details of the questions differed from person to person, basically all the questions were the same, at least in terms of the, I don't know, what you could say, the verbal algorithm inside the question, what people were looking for, what they were wrestling with. And so the answer that came down, it would have been possible one by one. I never dreamt we would have had so many responses. But what came down is, why throw people fish when you can teach them how to fish? And I said, huh? He said, here, just sit down at the keyboard. Let me give you the universal answer. And what came out was a rather long piece, but a stunning experiment in raising human consciousness to such an extent that we did is, in fact, the article is up on the website as well. There's a lot of information there that you will get from Zeus Speaks. And we ask people, before asking Zeus a question, read this and see what it does for you. It was like we turned off the spigot. Instead of getting tons of questions every single week, I now get one every 3 months. It's that powerful an article. What it does is it empowers people to answer their own questions instead of looking to outside source. And it does it in such a way that people tell me it's like being hit over the head with a hammer. They're going, oh, my God, of course, this is how you do it.
And Jean-Claude, that's important. So many of the spiritual teachings keep reminding us, as Christ has spoken, who does the work? It is the Father within. Go within to find the
absolutely.
Answers. And now what you're saying is that for so many of us on that search, by going to this area on goingdeeper.org and then clicking on the button about Ask Zeus, that we'll get to read something that will help many of us to actually learn to turn within on a consistent basis.
That's based on the way the questions have stopped dramatically, just plain ended, as if we put a deadline on there. The article must have been incredibly effective in terms of empowering people to become their own source of information. And at the end of the day, I tell people up front, you know, I sell myself as a metaphysical huckster, because I think that no matter who we are, no matter how well-intentioned we are, we're all trying to sell something, even if it's love and light and something that's very beautiful. We're salesmen. And I think I am, too. And I tell people I have three products that I sell, and I sell hard. The first one is to help people increase their awareness. The second is to rekindle the curiosity we all had when we were children. And the third, which I think is the most important of all, which is what we're talking about here, is to empower the being to become self-referential, to look for the answers, as you said, for the Father within, instead of constantly going to a tarot reader or asking someone's advice or feeling as if you're inadequate or not up to the task. If you only knew who you really were, all of this would fall away in a heartbeat. So the question is, how do we reunite beings with their own magnificence?
Yes, yes. Well, I'm ready to hear. That's to me the key question.
That's the journey. That's what's so interesting. I wish I could say, you know what, I have the answer. I don't. What I found out, at least for me, and I suspect it's true for many of us, is that this is all about being on the journey, rekindling the curiosity and seeing where it takes us. I've had a very interesting experience, and I tend to always talk about the stuff that came up last. I guess from an accounting standpoint, they'd call it LIFO, last in, first out. And I'm currently working on an article, struggling with it, actually, because I don't know where it's going. It's almost as if I'm picturing the experience within the illusion, which is what I call our life here, as a labyrinth, as a gigantic maze.
Okay.
And we can always turn to the right, to the left, and there's always an option to go in this direction or that. And what I find is that the well-beaten paths are the ones that people tend to follow. So we tend to fall into religious groups. We tend to fall into philosophical belief cultures. And we rarely walk the path that has been untrod before us, that is still a little bit rough.
The road less taken.
As Scott Peck would say, the road less traveled. We tend not to walk that out of fear that it will lead us astray, and actually we can count that it will. And the beauty is to be led astray and to let go of all of the concepts that you hold on to. If you find a way to let go of all belief and just wander in the maze, see where it takes you, the most amazing things happen, because it is there, around the corner that you never otherwise would have taken, that you meet a new aspect of yourself. And that is where you start gaining your own strength by being on your own journey, instead of joining in the chorus, singing from the common hymnal, and believing what your parents or your society or your family believes. You will soon learn, belief to me is the lowest possible form of processing information. To me, it's the lazy way out. From belief, you go to actually thinking about something. How novel would that be? And if you think about something long enough, or you experience something long enough, something may elevate, in rare, rare instances, to the level of knowing. If we were to use science as a parallel, we would say belief is akin to a hypothesis. It's an idea. Who knows? Maybe so, maybe not. If we then think about it and work with it and prove it, it becomes a theory. If it is invariably so within the structure of this particular local physical geometry, we then call it a law, like the law of gravity or Boyle's law of gas. But very few things are elevated to that. Yet people confuse belief with knowing. And so when you step back and take a look at our planet, what you have is a constant clash of beliefs. These are people who know nothing, who have rarely thought an independent thought in their life, yet they're willing to fight and die to defend a belief, because they bought into the concept that unless they grasp this particular straw, they will be doomed to eternal damnation, they will never receive salvation, and they will not be loved and accepted by God in his house of many mansions. And I'm going, how did this ever happen?
Well, can I ask a thought just was dancing in my mind that you may be able to help solve a bit of a mystery. As you were describing, where if we look at different cultures around the world where there's been long-term conflict, and yet it doesn't need to be that way. There's been, it seems like, an emphasis upon reverence for the ancestors, things that have happened to them, keeping the culture alive. And yet, in some of that keeping the culture alive, it seems like it's kept alive some of the old wounds, so that generation after generation is inflicting pain on itself and others that doesn't need to be there. Can you give any insight to, is there a way to have respect for our ancestors and not keep doing the same stuff again and again that keeps leading to pain and suffering?
I have, for me personally, the same respect for my ancestors as I have for the stepping stones that have helped me across the brook. I honor them for what they've done, and then I let them go. There are many, many cultures that do not. I remember I studied with Dr. Wilson Wang in Hong Kong. He said the first time we were driving on a street together, he said, the first time I drove on the street going past this hospital, I slammed my brakes. I thought I was going to hit somebody until I realized the street is populated by the ancestors, the ghosts of the beings who have died, who the Chinese, by their culture, will not let go because they venerate them so much and light candles for them and constantly talk about them and call them into their prayers instead of doing ceremony and letting go of the ancestors. So I don't think you can have your cake and eat it too, from my perspective. I don't like the concept. It just rubs against my grain like scratching a chalkboard. When we celebrate an event in the past as if it has meaning today, and we all do it, our cultures are based on it. We have national days, president days, Thanksgiving days, days of discovery, Columbus days, veterans days. I'm going, how do we ever find a way to encourage people to celebrate the present moment?
Mm.
It so rubs counter to the grain of our culture that it's a major uphill fight. So we've been enculturated the same way, insidiously, the way some of the Palestinian or young Israeli kids are brought up to hate each other, the way the Sunnis are brought up to hate the Shiites, or the Protestants in Northern Ireland to hate the Catholics. It's just ingrained in the beat of the culture itself. How do we transcend this without letting go of the past?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's one of the keys, how to honor the efforts and the progress or the intentions of the past and then release that so that we transform it into action in the present that is free and independent of the past.
We do it every day. I mean, from my perspective, those of us that are in what you called earlier the New Thought Movement. The New Thought Movement, is that what it was? The New Thought Age.
Yes.
Which I
new
love.
Age, New Thought.
The New Age, yeah. We stand on the shoulders of the Blavatskys and the Alice Baileys and the Ruth Montgomerys and so many people who blaze the trail for us to do what we're doing today. And I think we honor them best by absorbing their wisdom into our thinking and moving on, not by perpetuating the old. Can we not add something brand new and do something that is beyond a synthesis of the wisdom? I don't even want to go there, but inspiration of the wisdom. The fact that Mozart and Beethoven and Vivaldi and so many incredible composers were able to do what they did, broke for music what Roger Bannister broke when he broke the 4-minute mile for runners. And we don't have to erect statues to them, but we have to be internally inspired by the fact that genius preceded us.
See, this is so, what I'm hearing from you, it reminds me of one of my favorite Bible verses that I think is very much aligned with what you're talking about, John 14:12, in which Christ is saying, the miracles that I did, these, follow my ways, learn from what I did, and these and greater things than I've done shall ye do.
From my perspective, I think Christ would be appalled should he come back to earth now to see that he is worshipped instead of emulated. When people tell me they're a Buddhist, I go, yawn. If you tell me you're a Buddha, I'm very interested. When people tell me they're a Christian, I go, yawn. I say, if you tell me you are a Christ, I am very interested. Because that is the message. That is the message, not to be worshipped, not to fall into ritual and ceremony. And as you would say, you know, as you were asking before, and worship of the past, making every single year the same. You know, it is April, therefore it must be Easter. It is December, therefore it must be Christmas. How do we break free of this and blaze a new trail based on the inspiration of the being of Christ, as opposed to the literal word as taken down and changed God knows how many times, and all of a sudden become institutionalized? Do you know how many religions and denominations there are extant in the world right now? Most of them Christian.
I'm curious. 10,500.
And I'm going,
wow, I, I've got a lot left to try before I go.
You know, how many pieces of chocolate can you have after dinner before you've had enough? And I'm going, give me a break. I don't want to hear you quote somebody. I want you to be original and come up with your stuff. What do you see? Not what someone else sees. If we could empower every single being. Let me back up a second and try to explain where I'm coming from. I've played so many games in so many areas and have had so many extraordinary experiences that it's bent my mind into dimensions that don't normally translate into being here in the illusion, living here on Earth. And so I come back and I'm going, oh my God, this isn't real, but it's happening, and here I am, or here I think I am, and everybody else really thinks they're here, but they're not. How do we explain this in such a way that doesn't make me sound stark raving mad and really serves people to open up to new dimensions of being within themselves and to realize that there is far more to you and to every one of our listeners than ever, ever, ever they dreamt up in their philosophies. And it goes back to when I first saw, when I was shown exactly how a galaxy and a universe is created. Now, without going into all of the step-by-steps, incidentally, if anybody's curious about this, it's in my book called Going Deeper. The entire book is available at any bookstore or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any place you want to go, but you don't have to spend a penny for it. The entire book is up on the website to read at no charge. And it deals with a lot of the stuff that we're going to be talking about today and more and more and more. But it certainly deals with creation.
Is that the same place where we go to meet Zeus?
Absolutely, yes. GoingDeeper.org. You'll see the book. You'll see I write weekly articles on subjects like this and others for United Press International as one of their columnists. And the columns also appear there. Just click on UPI columns. You'll see that as well. There's a ton of reading, certainly enough to keep somebody awake for many nights.
Insomnia, no problem. Now you have something to do.
No problem. And in fact, some of the articles will probably put you to sleep in a whole different way, and other articles will wake you up in a whole different way. So who knows what will happen? We're here just to play.
But when I was out there,
I was able to look upon the face of God. Now, this is an extraordinary experience. And what I realize is that, my God, we have it wrong within the illusion. We have made somehow of God, in all the major religions, we have made of God a noun. Now, when you make of something a noun, you implicitly, immediately create separation. You have the creator and you have the creation. One is the cause, the other is the effect. There is distance between them. We are part of the creation. We are created in the image of God. We are not God. We are separate from the oneness. That's what falls out of looking at God as a noun. Almost all of our religions tend to do that. We worship it. We imbue it with all sorts of human traits and personality. It is good. It is generous. It is omniscient. It is omnipresent. And all the other things that one does, and we write about it, and we pray to it. But what we do with that separation is we then begin to believe that we are not only separate from the oneness, but separate from each other. We have been abandoned somehow and left to our own devices on a very remote planet, on a star, on a far-flung arm of a galaxy containing 200 billion stars, one of 200 billion galaxies in a local universe, and God knows how many other universes there are. And then I went through Buckminster Fuller's view of God as a verb. He said once, God, it seems to me, is a verb, and I held on to that for a while, and I said, no, that isn't it either. There is nothing in our language, nothing in the structure of our syntax, which can grasp the fullness of God. And it came to me one day when I was in Findhorn, on the northern end of Scotland, near the North Sea, and a young man gave up, and he just all of a sudden had this burst of inspiration, and he said the most remarkable thing. His name was Philip. He said, oh my God, I just realized. It's not that God is in all things. It's that God is all things. And oh my, it was like somebody hit me with the perfect ohm, the perfect tuning fork. My whole body began to vibrate. And I went, boy, yo, 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 yo. So when people say, is there a God? I say, no, there isn't. There is only God. There is nothing in creation, manifest or no, which is not part of the all that is. God is the unfoldment of creation itself. Every single aspect of that creation is part of God, experiencing itself from that perspective. So what you are, what I am, what each of the listeners are God experiencing itself through that particular point of view, that set of circumstances called a lifetime, whatever it is, an incarnation, whatever we want to call it down here. It is not that you are part of the all that is. You are all that is. Now, how to bring that down into words, how to put that through the strainer of the 26 letters of our alphabet and make it clear so somebody can actually grasp it, is probably a lifelong project for me, and I don't know that I really will succeed, but it's a lot of fun to play with. So when I bring that out to people, and I say, when you grasp who you are a continuum. And the book is called The Eyes of Infinity, the three eyes of infinity, the ego eye, the soul eye, and the God eye, that extends from the part of you within the illusion, through your soul, all the way into the oneness. And the closest way I could come of picturing it to talk about it is it's a vast cosmic hologram where every thought, every word, every deed, everything that you see and experience and feel and think gets passed into this hologram as part of the experience of all that is. Your gift to the oneness, to all of us, is to be as creative and unique and as courageous as possible.
Mm. Wow. Well, there's a goal.
There's a goal. There's a goal. Go get courage and do something that really makes your life exciting, that makes it rich. Go out today and create the most incredible story you ever can to relate to your grandchildren around a campfire one day.
One of the things I'm wondering, Jean-Claude, from your background, would be, as we would say in New Thought, you're a good manifester. You have done a number of positive things. So one of the things that I would ask, of course, sometimes people are, there's an old saying, I don't know if you've heard it, it goes back many years. It's something to the effect that when you're up to your ass in alligators, it's a little hard to remember that your job was to drain the pool.
Drain the swamp.
Yeah, the swamp. Thank you.
Ram Dass said something very interesting once. He said, while you're down here, take the curriculum. And so, you know, I see myself here as a projection into the illusion, infused with consciousness, but here I am. And I have a family, and I get involved with things of business. So what I did was I stepped back and I said, how does this work? Before I rush into all of this thing, what is going on down here? And I devoted probably too many years of my life early on to the business world. And what happened was very curious. The business was quite successful, and I ended up selling it to a public company for what seemed to me at the time an obscene amount of money. And relatively young in life, I think I was at that time in my early 40s. I remember being in South Africa on one of my business trips. I had businesses all over the world and things going on simultaneously in the Far East, in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and the UK. And I met a lady who was to become my wife. And I remember saying to her at one point, I'm in deep trouble. I don't know how we got into this conversation. It was early on. I have everything that the world would think that I should have. But what I've realized is I've been on this merry-go-round collecting these rings, these brass rings that everybody's been telling me to get. And I look at them, they're tarnished plastic. They're worthless. all the things, I mean, I got to the point where I achieved what people wanted. I reached my goal, and the goal was meaningless. I had set for me the wrong goal. And, you know, it's nice to say that, and people say, well, gee, you know, you have the money and all that kind of stuff. And I continue working hard, because what I do now in the metaphysical community not only doesn't pay my way, it costs. For most of the time, I pick up my own tabs, and I'm very free about giving my time to anybody who asks for it. And that's the way I choose to be of service. But I realize that there are two levels of games, and I'm sure I'm being simplistic, that's probably an infinite number, but for the sake of our discussion, one can play the small game of the illusion or the large game of creation. And they both overlap in many areas. But when people come out with the law of attraction and the secret and all sorts of things that people are now glomming onto, I'm going, what part of you is asking for this? I remember having an exquisite experience. I was on the cliffs of Del Mar watching the sunset, looking for the elusive green flash that I've yet to see. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I had this inspirational burst, one of these major epiphanies that changed my life. And what came to me was the realization that the greatest gift I have ever been given was to have sufficient consciousness to be aware that I was bearing witness to creation. And that anything that I asked for in addition to that would only serve to diminish what I already had. And I'm going, wow. We all have that gift if we just wake up to it. There is nothing larger. We have it all, and yet we focus on the hole in the middle of the donut, forgetting how scrumptious everything around that hole actually is, and how blessed we are to have sufficient consciousness to bear witness to creation. It doesn't get better than that. So here we are.
So how do you kind of take some value as so many people are opening up to the older teachings that were put forth in the movie The Secret? I mean, that's been part of the work of religious science that has been out there for many years, and other teachings, Emmett Fox, Ernest Holmes, all of this. Is there a way to blend with some of that, to be in the world successfully and yet not of it?
It depends where you focus. We only own two things. Everything else is absolute illusion. But within the illusion, we own two factors. And these are the most important and the most valuable. One is your attention, and the other is your intention. Where you focus your attention with intention, you have the cosmic formula of A, attention, plus I, intention, equals M, manifestation. What I question is, where are people putting their attention and their intention? If it's to generate more money, to find the perfect mate, to have a wonderful family, to have the perfect life, I'm going, isn't there something larger going on that you're not seeing? If the answer is no, and that's all they want, then I suggest that all the teachings of Emmett Fox and The Secret and all the other wonderful teachings that are out there are fine. If you want to play a larger game, then you have to ask another question.
Yes.
Who are you? What is the part of you making the request, perceiving it is lacking something that needs to be fulfilled? Now, if you want to play the larger game, you have to ask some very uncomfortable questions and be ready to release anything you may have thought was reality yesterday. Most people don't want to make this jump. And so for them, something which is a bridge, which allows them to become more like Donald Trump, more like Bill Gates, more like Oprah Winfrey, or any one of the heroes that they have out there that hold out for them the direction of an answer, seems to be valuable. I question it. I remember asking people, I used to ask people very, very often, if a genie came up and gave you three wishes, have three questions, you know, what questions would you ask? What would you like to know? And I'm thinking, you know, the nature of God, the nature of the universe, what is it all about, how do I serve? I mean, there's so many interesting questions that came to my mind. The overwhelming answer, the one that came out the most, was what will the winning numbers of the lottery be? And I'm going, you're kidding,
winning numbers,
right?
Of the lottery.
That's what people want. People want to win the lottery. People want the windfall of winning the lottery. And when you take a look at what is behind that is an absolute, total denial of who we really are as cosmic beings. And to me, it is painful beyond measure. And all I can do is honor free will and say thank you for answering the question.
Yes.
But no, I don't trod the same path as The Secret and many other things that are out there. What I'm trying to do is open up other doors that give people a glimpse into the infinite nature of creation itself, not a prescribed path. I mean, the one thing that I don't know, I have no dogma, I have no ism, I have no particular way to follow. What I encourage people to do is to become self-empowered, rekindle curiosity, and build awareness. What you do is your gift to yourself and to all of creation. I mean, if all you're going to do is join the chorus, then that doesn't add a lot of originality to the hologram. But if you're willing to break the mold,
yes,
and be extraordinary.
So from a place of,
boy, that's juicy.
Awareness,
I'd love to meet you. I'd love to play next to you.
We're able to.
That's what I try to encourage
that,
to be
that
people
curiosity,
to be within their own lives,
the
in whatever context
talk
is real
about
to
two
them.
Important things. Seek first the kingdom of God, and then
so this
and righteousness
is, this is
and
the
all
stuff of it,
added,
and it constantly
and
changes. I tell myself when I fall asleep at night,
second to me,
if I believe something and I wake up the next morning believing the same
child,
thing, hey, ain't no big deal. I'm stuck.
To me, is that that rekindling of the curiosity.
At least I know I'm stuck. Now I can try to let go and rekindle my curiosity and try to find another perspective. If someone were to ask me this, if you were to say, Jean-Claude, sum it all up in one sentence of 10 words or less, everything you've learned down here on planet Earth, it would be this. What you see depends on where you're looking from. Why would it be at all surprising if you refuse to change the point from which you view that what you see never changes? And for most people who are dogmatic or fundamental in their beliefs, all they want to do is view through those lenses and accept anything that backs up what they already believe to be true as good and reject anything which denies what they already believe as bad. And they're stuck. And if they insist that someone else do it the same way and believe the same things for whatever reason, and I'm sure most of the reasons that people give for doing it are very positive, they're very loving. But if they insist that others do, English has a word for them. They're called bigots. If we proselytize and insist that others view from our particular point of view, we become a bigot. And what I would ask is just the opposite. Have the courage to constantly shift the point from which you view and see what you see. What you will recognize is truth with a capital T does not exist. It is only a form of relativism, which is the curse word that most of the fundamentalists would use against me. He's a relativist. Absolutely. People ask me my religion, I tell them I'm a born-again Taoist. I have no idea what that means. You know, to me, it's all
there
a goof.
Go.
I could wipe out religion in a single stroke, I would do so. And then let people find a way to discover who they really are outside of who they believe they are. And realize they've been looking far too close. They are large and grand and majestic beyond measure. How do we reconnect people with their own majesty? And that leads me to my favorite topic to talk about, which is a new project that's coming on board.
Yeah.
I was recently a speaker at a conference in Cyprus, in Nicosia, the island that's in the Mediterranean. It's off the coast of Turkey and Lebanon. And met there several times with the conveners of the conference and several other speakers. And I got to realize, you know what? Collectively, we're accomplishing nothing. We're spinning our wheels. All the stuff that we do, you know, that we do on the radio, that I write about, that we speak about, that we lecture about, that we, you know, teach, it's not bad stuff, but nothing's happening. Look at the world. We've accomplished nothing. In the last 30, 50, 60 years, we've spun our wheels. We look good. We sound good. We've done nothing, at least not in terms of taking the planet off its death track.
Yes.
I realized it was not the lack of information. We don't have to reinvent the message. The message is divine. It's brilliant. It's wonderful. It's not reaching enough people. When I speak, if there's 70 or 80 or 100 people in the room, that's a full house. And if I could do that every single day for the rest of my life, and I divide that into the 6.5 billion people on the planet, I think I would live longer than the Earth has been around, or darn near.
Yes.
But we have the reach. We have the internet. That's why, for example, I put the book out at no charge. Now is the time to release everything to people without charging. We're going to build, and I've got the cooperation of tons of people behind this, including Don and your network, and many other networks, and many other magazines, and United Press International, and quite a few other people who will help bring this out to the public. We're going to build one of the world's largest websites, linking together 10 to 20 million computers around the world using the BOINC technology, very similar to the technology that SETI uses, the Society for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, so that the computers can be both receivers and transmitters when the people want. They'll be in control. But we will put on the website all of the metaphysical teachings that we can find that are non-directional, non-denominational, that encourage people to increase their awareness, become curious, and become self-empowered. All the sacred geometry, all the teachings, all the chants, interviews such as this will be available so people can download and listen to them at any time, film clips, courses, writings, anything we can get our hands on. We'll even have 24/7 ongoing live conference calls that people can tune into and listen into or participate with in every language imaginable around the planet. We'll have people leading these constantly. And we'll have a blog site, and it'll be like a MySpace and a YouTube, but in the metaphysical realm, where people can begin sharing with each other. And there are templates that I found when I was talking to groups in Phoenix just recently that I've written about. You can read about them in an article on the UPI portion of my website. A template for groups getting together for people getting together in small groups called Out of the Box. And it's a way of empowering individuals to emerge. Imagine ourselves now as if we're living in the chrysalis stage. We're moths that have built our cocoon, and we're in this cocoon now thinking that this is all there is. And I'm saying, let's try to figure out a way to help all of us to burst out as butterflies and learn how to fly in the little time we have left on this planet. And that's what this project is. It's going to be called Our Global Network, and we're in the process of putting it together. So I would welcome everyone's participation. The cost of getting on board is zip. Nothing. We want everyone to help us make it grow and become a vast network to shift the consciousness on this planet. And I tell people, if you want to get involved in politics, have fun. I could care less. If you want to get involved in environmental issues, have fun. I could care less. What I care about is increasing the awareness, curiosity, and self-empowerment of individuals. What they do with it is whatever they want. So this is my cause for the rest of my life.
Well, is there, I guess you don't have any agenda then. In other words, you want to increase people's awareness. You want them to become basically conscious creators, right?
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better. Have people become conscious creators. Let go of the concept of let's become co-creators. You are creators. Everything about your life you've created. Not everything is wonderful. Not all the finger painting came out great. But you created it all. And you are living your own creation. You can write it. You can change it. You can act in it. You can direct in it. You can watch it. You have far more power than ever you possibly could have imagined. Don't waste it on little things like attracting things. Think big. Whatever you have asked for up until now isn't nearly big enough. We are in deep, deep trouble. When I say we, the humankind is in deep, deep trouble. The sands have almost run through the hourglass. And if I can impress upon you any words, it would be this. We need your help. We need you to emerge and stop feeling victimized by the littleness of your life and emerge as the butterfly into who you really always were. That would be it. All the rest, I think, that's for me, is commentary. You know, we can talk about all the theories of things, and I know we've had interesting discussions on EMFs and my concern about that and the demise of the butterflies, the demise of the honeybees around the world. I've just done an article on that and what it means for mankind. There's so many things that we can talk about, but at the end of the day, we're buying days and weeks and months. What we've done to ourselves collectively on this planet is just a function of not remembering who in fact we really are and thinking that the way we can get is by owning stuff that is unownable, as Chief Seattle used to say about land. Acquiring, yes. Becoming wealthy, becoming famous, having people love us. What they're loving is the holographic projection in an illusion. Become the projector, not the projector, not the projection. Move higher, higher, higher on the infinite continuum of consciousness of who you really are, and you will find out that you and God, in fact, are one.
Well, you've taken a significant path to expand your awareness. You said that you deliberately learned about what it was to be successful in the world of business, and then you powerfully created things around the world, and then from that place were able to study some of the great masters all around the world, and so this is a powerful creation that you've done. What I'm wondering, someone that's in the midst of just attempting to make their life work.
Be extraordinary.
What would you?
It doesn't matter whether you're global or local. I mean, the geography of the issue, falls away. It's meaningless. It's irrelevant. What matters is how you can act. This is more than Marshall McLuhan said. It's don't think globally and act locally. Think cosmically and act locally. Think cosmically and act globally. I mean, it's however you want to do. It's expand your consciousness to the highest possible perspective you can imagine. Throw yourself up to that point and look from there. We talk a lot about having a dialogue with your higher self. And the book Going Deeper goes into how to do that and who your higher self really is. And when you catch on to who that higher self really is, that is you, you all of a sudden become incredibly empowered. Now the question is, how do you dialogue with this part? And the answer is very simple. You throw up a point as far as you can out into the continuum of consciousness, and you ask that point a question. And from that point, the answer comes. And you start dialoguing with yourself as if you were talking to the ascended masters, as if you were talking to the voice, the face of God, and getting answers from a higher perspective that you never dreamt existed. And all of a sudden you realize that that is who you are, and you become self-referential, not within the ego, lowest part of your being, but with your higher self at the highest part of the being, probably as close to the oneness as a unique personality as one will ever get.
Wow.
And that's who you do dialogue with. And there isn't a question that you can't ask.
Wow.
That will not be answered.
That's wonderful.
Provided you play the larger game. Mm. All you want to know is the numbers of...
Wow. I'm curious about how many of my wonderful listeners took that technical glitch time to expand your consciousness and to go to that frame of reference of something that is at the heights of your imagination, of the best that you can be. Jean-Claude has beckoned to us to expand that perspective instead of just from a limited perspective of our own life or from an expanded perspective of someone that we might admire, an Oprah Winfrey, someone that's doing well in the world physically, and to go to levels far beyond that as our frame of reference, so to speak, to climb to the top of Mount Everest, except to climb to the top of the highest mountain in the biggest galaxy in the universe. Jean-Claude, is that some of what you're beckoning us to do?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, imagine you're an adult and a five-year-old child comes to you and says, Daddy, Mommy, why is the sky blue? And let's assume now you don't know the answer to that. And you're busy and you just want to brush the kid off. And what if you took another approach and say, what an interesting question. Why do you suppose the sky is blue? And elicit from the child the answer from the perspective of the child. And then say, wow, I never thought of it that way. Let's go look together and see if we can find, maybe there's some other answers too, but I like yours. But always ask when a child says, why this, why this, why this, what do you think? I remember being with the Dalai Lama, and this was back at the point when His Holiness received the Nobel Peace Prize. And if I'm not mistaken, that was back in 1989. And we were in a conference in Newport Beach in California. And he was not aware of it. It was announced somewhere in the middle of the conference. And he never skipped a beat. And while, you know, everybody made tremendous hay of it, he didn't take that as an opportunity to bash China or to stir the pot or to make himself right or to talk about the political rhetoric. He just said, perhaps this will be a way for all of us to come together in peace. But then what I found the most remarkable was when one of the doctors that was present asked him a question. His Holiness stopped and looked up, and he said, what an interesting question. What do you think? Now, this was the Dalai Lama, who didn't feel as if he had to come up with an incredible answer to stun people with his insight and intelligence. He was able to look at someone as a peer, as an absolute equal, and say, what an interesting question, what do you think? And that, to me, has become a role model for the rest of my life. So that I'm with a person, I'm not interested in impressing them with what I think. I already know what I think. What I'm interested in is, what do they think? And more than that, I don't really want to know what they think so much is, where are they thinking from? What is the point from which they view, and what do they see from that point of view? The American Indian would say, you don't know a man until you've walked a lifetime, not a mile, a lifetime in his moccasins. And what they're saying is, how can you know what a person is experiencing unless you are that person? But the trick of active listening, of full communication, is that we can merge as people. You actually can move into the point from which I speak. I can move into the point from which you speak. And the realization is that what you see from where you view is absolutely correct for you from that viewpoint. So if you say something and I say something and they don't agree, we're both right. Now what? There is no such thing as right and wrong. There is only perception from where you are viewing.
Yeah.
The trick is to be able to constantly and be willing to constantly shift the point from which you view into the point through which others view. That is what the cosmic hologram allows you to do when you move in and out of that area of perspective, and you're willing to do that work.
Wow. So as you were saying that, it was stimulating my curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of like for areas where I want to grow, for my listeners, for people out there who want to achieve something, a goal, some change in their life, whatever it would be, what I'm gleaning from what you've said is for me, for all of us to be curious and willing to keep viewing a circumstance from a different perspective until what we want to have happen, we find a perspective from which whatever it is that we want it is absolutely easy and achievable. And if we're viewing it from some perspective where there's difficulty or challenge, then that's a signal to move on to a different perspective, because from that place of divine creation, the creation would be easy and effortless. It would just be a matter of continuing to find a different viewpoint, a frame of reference, a perspective. And when we're at the right one, then the creation is a done deal. It's easy. Is that kind of what you're helping us to think about?
Yeah, and just to make your life more fun, more interesting.
Become a child again. We have to have fun doing this, too.
Oh. Say again?
I said we have to have fun doing this, too.
Oh, no. It's all about having fun. Curiosity is worships at the altar of fun. I mean, that's the big thing. I mean, near where I live, there's the tram that takes you up to the top of Mount San Jacinto. There are windmills that generate electricity. There's the living desert. I remember a few weeks ago, I was invited to a luncheon, and the people there had exotic animals at the luncheon. And I spent quite a bit of time with the man who owned the local store that sold, you know, the parakeets and the parrots and the macaws and all these exotic birds that never were in the wild. They were, you know, taken as eggs or as little chicks and always raised by the human hand, and interacting with them and to feel the birds through his eyes and the incredible love he had for each one and how he knew the personality of every single one of them. And another man brought his giraffe, who's a player in a lot of the movies in Hollywood. And the giraffe only knew people, and we all fed the giraffe and had interactions with the giraffe and what that was like. And another man brought his elephant, and what it's like to be near an elephant, and you actually vibe the elephant. You have this incredible interchange. All of this was in my backyard. Every night when I look at the paper, there's an incredible movie I could have seen, or a discussion group I could have gone to. I can't be in every place at once. But every place is fascinating beyond belief. And then we have access to the Internet, which is where you are broadcasting.
This right. And one quick thing as we're starting to go over our time, Jean-Claude, mm-hmm. is to remind people to visit you at goingdeeper.org, and to purchase or to read for at no charge at all your wonderful book called Going Deeper, and to click on that part about Zeus and take a look at this powerful, what we call a stuffed animal, which is the embodiment of divine wisdom and consciousness. There, when you see the picture of Zeus, you'll know what I'm talking about, beloved listeners. Jean-Claude, I want to thank you. I've had such fun visiting with you today.
It's my pleasure. If we can this Saturday shake up the world, then you and I, Les, we've done a good thing.
Well,
let's leave every place empowered every single time we pass through it.
Yes. There you have it, folks. Those are words of wisdom. So may you be empowered from our talk, and may you feel that empowerment and then share it wherever you go. Blessed be. We thank you, Jean-Claude. We thank you, Heavenly Father, for bringing us to this. We thank you, Don, for creating this venue. We thank you, all my beloved listeners, for your divine part of creation. Blessed be all of us. Have a wonderful week, and look forward to tuning in next week for more exciting adventures. Thank you, thank you, thank you. God bless
you. My pleasure. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let go of that God, let myself lose, and let go of